The following class was led by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on June 21, 1999. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good evening. Welcome to our second talk on Katagiri Roshi's teachings. And tonight we'll have a video, as I promised, so you can meet the guy, hear him speak. I think it should be rather interesting for you. And it might make some of this come alive, I think, a little bit. And in the second little piece that we'll get into tonight, I think I'll pause and then we'll look at the video. Be a little over 5 minutes worth. I have a little bit to say about that before we get into that, but tonight, let's just pick it up where we left off. Page 8, there's no escaping this moment. Here we start out with a real Katagiriism. It's just a classic kind of statement he would make. When you sit in Zazen, how many beings sit with you? And it took me years to understand what he meant when he talked this way. And so if you don't fully appreciate what he's saying, first of all, in just reading this, how many beings sit with you? And I think we can get an abundant feeling from this and a real sense of what he means. But I want to try to relay that he's, in addition to whatever you pick up from that, I mean, that you're sitting with other beings, you're sitting with other people, you're sitting with the world that's going on around you, the sounds of birds, animals, different kinds of things like this. You're sitting with all beings. And it took me a long time to begin to appreciate just exactly what he meant by this, and I'll try to relay that to you. If you have that sense that you're sitting with others, that's not wrong. I think you can take this, and I think he meant it in that way. But in addition to that kind of reading, that just that direct reading of the words and the reading of the statement, I think he meant that, but in addition to that, I finally was able to learn from him that he means something far more profound than that, which I would like to try to help you get a sense of right now. He said, when you sit in Zazen, how many beings sit with you? Right where you sit, many beings. Emotions, thoughts, memories, physical sensations appear from moment to moment. So when he said many beings sit with you, he is talking about emotions, thoughts, memories, physical sensations. He might also be talking about other people, the birds, plants, the sound in the zendo, the floor, the air, the windows, all of that. Many beings. But he's also talking to something far more subtle than that. Like, for example, when he says emotions, I remember when I first heard him say that anger is a being. Anger is a being. I couldn't understand. What do you mean, anger is a being? And I thought, wow, maybe you're going to hear on the video. It's easy to think that because of his language, his use of English, it might be easy to think that, well, he's just made a mistake. He didn't make that many mistakes. He kind of stumbled with his language. But he basically knew what he was saying. And he meant just that, that anger is a being. And we tend to think that, well, no, I'm a being, you're a being, we're all beings here, and then we get angry, something like this. So I'm a being, I'm a person here, and then sometimes I get angry. Well, that isn't the way Katagiri sees it. That isn't the way the enlightened see it. That's just the way we see it when we're kind of locked into our dualistic kind of thinking. We're locked in our delusion. Is that I am a being, I am something solid, I am something persisting from moment to moment, and every once in a while I acquire this attribute of anger. And sometimes I can get rid of it again, but then it shows up again. Something like that. But I'm going on, and I just kind of go through these kinds of changes. This isn't Katagiri Roshi's understanding of this at all. Anger is a being. How many beings sit with you? So you're sitting here and you're sitting with all beings. And these beings are, it's this ongoing flux and change from moment to moment. This is the reality of your life, that you are not anything in particular. But there are all these different kinds of beings in continuous flux and change, such as anger. You think about it, and like I say, it took me a long time to appreciate that he was saying just, or he meant exactly what he was saying here. That anger, if we have anger here in this moment, we have a being. Anger can only be expressed as a being. And that's how we find anger. And in the next moment, maybe we find something else. In the next moment, something else. The next moment, something else. This is the reality of our life. That we don't actually find any solidity here, any kind of persistence of a personality or something like this that's going on from moment to moment. What we find is this constant change, this flux and change of emotion and thoughts, memories, all of these different kinds of things. Of course, birds, pebbles, trees, you'll hear him on the tape. He talks like this, birds, pebbles. So, you know, he starts listing things like this. But yes, we sit with all these beings, but every being that we find is momentary. It is something that arises in this moment and gone in the next. Something else now has arisen. And this is the change, the flux, the flow, the movement, the dynamic reality, the living reality of our life. And this is what he's speaking here. So even as you sit here in Zazen, so you enter into a room, you're just all by yourself, you're sitting at home. How many beings sit with you, he's saying? So in this moment, or in the 20 minutes or so you're sitting there, how many beings show up? How many beings are sitting with you? There's different kinds of thoughts, feelings, memories. All these things are continuously coming up in each moment. A multitude of beings are sitting with you. Or perhaps we could say sitting as you. And you are sitting as all this multiplicity of being. And there's actually no limit to this multiplicity of beings, this multitude of beings. And it reaches out both temporally and spatially, beyond the bounds of the area in which you sit. I think there'll be places in this text from time to time where we'll be exploring some of these aspects. And for those of you who have had some courses from me, we've talked about this sort of thing as well. So I don't think I'll say much more about that at this point, but just going on then, he says, right where you sit, many beings appear from moment to moment. He said, yet this moment is very simple, so why not just take care of it with all your heart? So the moment is very simple. What's complicated about this moment? Well, all this stuff keeps coming up. So it seems like there's something complicated, but this complication is just going on within our own minds. Life can become very complicated, very confusing, very frightening, very difficult. But what's really so difficult about it? What's so frightening? What's so confusing about it? Well, actually nothing at all. If we would just look and see what is actually taking place in this moment, it's very simple. From moment to moment, life is really quite simple. But we are caught up, we're not in the moment, we're caught up in our thoughts, our fears, our worries, our expectations, our longings, and we're not really in this moment, sitting here with all beings that are sitting here together with us. In fact, we barely notice all these other kinds of beings sitting with us or as us at all. So he said, this moment is very simple, so why not just take care of this moment with all your heart? He says, but you can't, he points out, you can't do this. He said, you try, and then you start to think things over, you know, and you're trying to do something. But he said, it's if you notice very carefully what's going on here, and you're going to try to take care of this moment, you're going to try to do something, you're going to try to think things over, you're going to try to settle things out, you're going to work out your problems, whatever. This is the problem. This is just to perpetuate it. This is just to keep it going. He says it's only your thinking that has gone wandering off, stumbling over all the beings of the moment. So it is very important for us to notice this. That in fact, apart from our thinking, apart from our thoughts, seem very real to us. They seem to have a lot of weight, a lot of power. But actually, it's just thinking. We can change our thoughts. They can drop away, and we don't have to feed them. And if we learn to stop feeding our thoughts, our worries, our fears, our expectations, and things of this sort, they kind of die back to a more manageable, reasonable level. And we can remain pretty much in touch with just exactly what is going on here. He said, what about those persons who are facing death? Is their situation different from yours? There's really no difference, he says. They're doing the same thing too. They're stumbling over all the beings of this moment. It's really no different than the situation you're in now. Or if we flip that around, look at it the other way. If you can learn to deal with all of these different beings that sit with you, that show up from moment to moment, in other words, don't feed them, don't give them all kinds of powers and things, you can learn to sit calmly with stability and tranquility right in the midst of whatever happens to be coming up in this moment. We can even do this while we are facing death, is what he's saying here. And it really doesn't matter. Sometimes we think, well, right now I'm too young to die, you know. So if I had to face death now, I mean that wouldn't be fair. It wouldn't be right. I mean, how could you expect me to do that? But as I mentioned last week, I was 32 years old when I found out I had cancer. It was pretty bad. I wasn't expected to live. It was a stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and in 1978, you didn't live with, very long with that. But for some reason, I did live. But what I learned, which really surprised me, was I was thinking, you know, here I'm 32 years old, I'm going to die, and somehow it didn't seem right. But in contemplating and looking at this and grappling with this, I realized that it really wouldn't make any difference if I were 84 or 96. When death is staring you in the face, it's the same situation. We might think that, well, when I get to be old, I'll somehow learn to adjust to this matter that my life is coming to an end. There isn't too much time left. Well, actually not. The mind doesn't age. You know, have you ever noticed that you look in the mirror and you know, particularly those of us who are kind of getting on a little bit here now, you look in the mirror and you're kind of surprised that you're not a teenager. You know, every time I'm starting to see all these gray hairs now, you know. I remember a few months ago I was sitting with my brother, who's one of my brothers, he's 12 years older than me. Looks very similar to me. And he was sitting opposite me, and we were in a restaurant, and behind him was a big mirror. And so from where I was sitting, I could see him there, I could see me. It's like before and after. I mean, but the other thing is that my age now, I'm noticing that it doesn't seem very long before I catch up to where he is, you know. So, but the point I want to make is that it doesn't really matter. Don't think that, death is somewhere off in the future, so I'll deal with it then. No. You got to learn to deal with this moment. Many beings come up with in this moment. If you are stumbling over beings in this moment, you will just continue to stumble over. And, of course, death is just one of these things. So those persons who are facing death, is their situation different from yours? No, not at all. There really is no difference. And it has nothing to do with what age you are. So he says we have to take care of this moment. That is all. And then he goes on to say that this moment is not the idea of this moment. So we can't take care of this moment by thinking about it, by trying to arrange it in our mind or to figure something out. We don't learn to stop stumbling over all of these beings of the moment by somehow learning to, I don't know, arrange them or make them, you know, not show up or anything of this sort. That's just simply to get outside of this moment once again. And this is where we are always spending our time, reaching out there, over there, that other person, that other situation, that other thing. We're always out there trying to work it out. And we can't, because you don't have any power out there. You know, you're very limited out there in the world. But what is taking place right here, right now with you as you sit here in this moment with all these beings that are showing up in this moment? This is where you can take care of this. And it is not an idea. It is the fact that you are sitting here now having a real, true, genuine experience is not an idea of sitting here having a real, true, genuine experience. What you might want to do about it, or what you think you ought to be doing about it, all these kinds of things, this is ideas. This is just thoughts. This is just emotions. These are the beings of the moment that just keep coming up and that we stumble over because we think they have weight. We think they have solidity. And before we know it, we have let them kind of overpower us. He said, whatever we may think about this moment, our practice is just to return to it. This moment is where all beings exist. And so this is where we have to learn to be, is just to come into this moment. All beings exist here in this moment from moment to moment. We can't deal with these things, whether if we go off to the future or the past. Okay, that's a very, very important point, very subtle point. I think there's perhaps other places here where he talks about these many beings, you know, sitting with you. But Katagiri Roshi is always speaking in a way where he is not coming from a dualistic point of view, like there's you and then there's all these other beings here, you know. No, this is all happening at once. This is your actual experience. That this is all happening of a piece, and it really isn't a divider. It only appears to be that way, and you only appear to be in opposition, separation from everything else. But that's not quite what we have here. Well, the next piece, I'm just going to say a little bit, and then I'm going to show you the video. Next little section here on page 10, it's called Touching the Sauce of Existence. And it, of course, says here, source. I put that in there because the transcriber, when they gave me the transcription, it said, Touching the Sauce of Existence. And you'll see why, because he uses that word in this video. The R doesn't come out. It's touching the sauce of existence. I would come up, I'd get these transcripts from time to time. Like one was there's something related to we may or may not hit tonight. But there's one transcript I got where it read, it said, it's just like war coming up from the ground, filling the battle of your life. Your life is really a big battle, okay? And I thought, this doesn't seem right to me. So I went back and got the tape, and I listened to myself, and I was listening, and he said, it's just like war coming up from the ground, filling the battle of your life. You know, but that's what it sounded like. But I'd learned to hear Katagiri, and I realized what he was saying was, it is just like water coming up from the ground, filling the bottle of your life. Your life is really a big bottle, okay? But see, once the person heard war, then they heard battle, you know. So, well, anyway, but you'll see why they might have gotten it that way. Let's see. Maybe before we get into this, let me just say a few things about Katagiri Roshi. What can I say? He took his practice very seriously. He took life very seriously and his teaching very seriously. And so he's a very serious a person. And yet at the same time, one of the things that would really characterize him is that he had a lot of humor. He had he laughed a lot. He smiled a lot. You're going to get a good taste of that in this clip that I'm going to show you. But at the same time, once in a while you might see him, he'll get this serious look briefly and then he's off again. Sometimes, though, he would give you a very strict and stern talk. But he ran a whole range of emotional expression. But I think this one really brings out his warmth and his humor quite a bit. It was just this clip, however. This is kind of a long tape, and it was... It's from some kind of a conference or something that he attended, I believe in Boulder, Colorado. It was kind of a Christian Buddhist dialogue kind of thing. And one of the Christian representatives that was there speaking, he'll make some reference to him here in the tape, is Brother David. Okay, so that's so when he talks about Brother David, he's talking about one of his, not debaters, but what were they? Dialoguers, I guess, at this conference. And also, he uses the term sauce, no source, and so you, and he's also talking about a bridge. Okay, if you don't get it, he's talking about a bridge, building a bridge between, the Christian Buddhist, so we can dialogue and talk together. And he's going to talk about how to do this and what we tend to do and what we really ought to be doing if we really want to build a bridge, keep the bridge short. You know, so he's going to be talking about this. And what else? There's, he also uses the term kinship. Okay, kinship, close, warm relation. So let's see. I hope that'll help you. And if there's anything else that isn't too clear, I'll try to remember. So source, kinship, Brother David. Oh, and he's in the middle. He's sitting here with his glasses on. He's commenting on this Hindu scripture, talking about these kinds of matters of relationships and things of this sort. And so he's commenting on this, and it's rather dry. He can get pretty dry at times, particularly when he's commenting, and he's reading, and he's talking, he's reading. And he gets to this point where he wants to make a point, and he takes his glasses off. And this is Katagiri, classical Katagiri. Well, here we go. Okay.
So, there is some responsibility they would take through after creating this story, because no conclusion yet. So that question is, responsibility, their responsibility is that what is the source? As original nature of material aspect of human being, human world, what is it? And another question is, what is original nature of spirit? As the seed and germ of spirit, human consciousness, what is it? And the third, this is very interesting. Third is, what is kinship? By which two things, source and spirit, original spirit, come together and working together and create. What is the the kinship in action? What occurs between? Is that clear? For instance, if I see Brother David, and without saying anything, but between us, spark, right? Spark, not noisy spark, not buzzy spark, but some spark, Hey, Brother David, you're a nice guy, something like that, smile. So some sparkling there. Anyone experience this one? So I think then that sparkling create kind of a bridge through what we can shake hand.
Bridge.
Don't you think so? But when you think, when you get the spark between Brother David and I, we found a bridge, nice bridge. And then, if you find a nice bridge, Brother David and I attached to it, and making the bridge longer and longer and longer, thinking about Brother David, from where he comes, what he's doing. He's a nice boy. Boy, he's not a nice boy. Always talking about. And finally, hey, let's shake hands. That's it. But finally, we walk a long, long bridge, and both of us completely exhausted. And then shake hands. That's it. So before your exhaustion, after walking long distance, there is some responsibility. What is it to make a bridge shortest? Okay? For this, your thinking, way of thinking must be pure and simple. Just stand up. Whatever you feel, feel. And pass. Pass by. That is most important. And then naturally, we can naturally make a bridge shortest. Or we should create more tolerance and flexible and compassionate atmosphere and circumstances. And then that make it shorter and shorter. But if you make something rigid between so-called thinking again and again, then you make it longer and longer. But it's not. If you try to understand human beings, after walking a long bridge, it is not the real human being you have understood. No, it's not real human being. It's not real understanding of human world. So we have to understand human beings, bird, pebbles, at the passing on shortest bridge. That time we can really walk hand in hand in peace.
Well, that's Kage Roshi. Human beings, birds, pebbles. For 15 years I heard that. I don't know what it was about birds, pebbles, but you'll see it in here too. It was actually in here many more times than it'll appear. Shambhala said enough is enough. So we couldn't keep it all in there. But okay. So this touching the sas of existence. Did you all understand? Any questions about what he maybe? Yeah, Mike.
Well, the part that I think he started out talking about...
we had the three points.
The three points, and then he started talking about building the shortest possible bridge, and he lost me in the transition.
Okay, well, what he's saying there is that these three points of the source of what is the source of human spirit or consciousness,
right.
Okay, and then we have this matter of kinship. Wait, what was this?
Kinship of
a spirit, yes. And anyway, he said that what we need to do is to establish this bridge. So here we are. He was at a Christian Buddhist dialogue here. Maybe I'll just turn this off. Christian Buddhist dialogue, is going on, and they first meet. He meets Brother David. Well, how do you do? They shake hands, very friendly, and now we've established, they both approach this dialogue with an open heart and in good faith and with friendliness. So they shake hands, and now we've established something. But, see, we don't settle for that. Now we got to start talking. So we've got a bridge. It's a nice bridge, he said, nice bridge. But now we start talking. Please, when the bridge is getting longer, and I'm thinking, well, who is this Brother David now, and why is he here? And, and the bridge is getting longer and longer, and they keep talking. And so this is probably their third or fourth day into this thing. And then he says, after we go across this long bridge, finally we're just exhausted. And then we shake hands, he said, see. And so what he's saying is that we have a responsibility to, first of all, recognize the reality of our life, that we've have established this bridge right off, right away. If you look at most people, you know, are open to this. They want to get along. We want to be friendly. We want, you know, but pretty soon we make a connection and we're talking, you know, and we start categorizing people and boxing them up and putting them over here. Pretty soon the bridge is getting longer and longer. Now, to try to get across, we become exhausted just trying to communicate and get across. If we go back to the source of the human spirit, human consciousness, we will find the bridge is really very, very short. We get caught up in our thinking, in our conceptualizing, in our trying to straighten this out. We want, well, for like for those of you who were here this weekend when Saturday night, when... help me out, my guy. Oh, Yozan Mosley was here. I blanked out. And he talked about here in the West, he was kind of talking about Eastern psychology versus Western psychology. And here in the West, we want an explanation. We want everything explained. In Eastern thought, Eastern psychology, it's experiential. That we experience it. Well, the experience already we have experienced. We just stop and pay attention to what the experience was at in the initial stage. We have close communication and friendliness. Mm-hmm. Then we get lost in a lot of abstraction, a lot of talking, a lot of thought, trying to straighten what out. We haven't paid any attention to what we already had at the beginning. Mm-hmm. You see, so we suffer from this as human beings. It isn't that we can't have a dialogue and discuss and talk. We should, but we put too much on that. We ignore the actual source and spirit of our lives, the natural friendliness that is there. Okay, so here in touching the source of existence, you said what we need is warm horizontal communication. So that's kind of related to what he was talking about there in the video. He said it is not enough, though, to understand this in theory. And so this is just very much related to what he was saying there. If we don't practice it, our life becomes fragmented and cold. So, you know, we have this idea, this notion that, yes, we should, communicate and reach across and all of this and walk the bridge together. We do this in our heads. We do this in theory. We haven't given very much attention to engaging ourselves in the reality of this moment and living our life in the dynamic reality of this moment. All these beings coming up in each moment. Okay, and he says if we don't practice it, our lives become fragmented and cold. And this is. This is kind of where we live. If you always want to, it's kind of strange to see that we reach out. We want to get a good handle on something. We want to understand. We want to make sense of something. So we reach for that explanation. We try to get this kind of understanding. We ask the question. We try to get closer in terms of it. So we get a better idea of just what it is that we have here. But what we don't realize is that we've, in the process of doing that, we have pushed whatever it is, another person, the situation, whatever the object is, we've set it off over there. We just keep, like Kategori used the analogy, we've made the bridge longer and longer. And now we're kind of isolated. And this is how we tend to feel very much of the time in our lives, that we're cut off from others, we're isolated from others. It's because we don't notice, that the reality of our life is that we're already here together with all beings at once. Even now. But he says, once we become cold, then we require rules. Well, then, yes, once everything is kind of really separated out this way and we see things this way and we really believe it is this way, and noticing all these differences between us, say, and all those people over there, not really noticing that basically we have the same kind of wants, dreams, and ambitions, and that sort. We're pretty much made of the same. We ignore all of that. We see these differences. We get caught up in our fears, our worries, things like this. Now we have a lot of problems. We have a lot of social problems. Now we have to start forming a lot of rules, regulations, and then these rules become stronger and stronger, he says here. In order to have warm human relations, we must pay attention to what is. What is there before we started doing all of this, before we started trying to make all these arrangements? In other words, we must touch the source of existence, he said. And now what he equates this with is finding this profound stability and tranquility, which is already yours. It is right here in your life even now. If we would only notice it, if we'd only just see what we have here, right here in this very moment. He said, under all circumstances, we must be rooted in the source of existence, right in the middle of the dynamic unfolding of our daily life. We must remain calm, quiet, and unperturbed. And at the end of this little section, he says, stability, imperturbability, and tranquility are not stagnant water. This is a very important point, too. We might think that this stability that he's talking about is just settling down and becoming very still, very quiet, you know, maybe like a pond of stagnant water. Of course, if we look very closely, even a pond of stagnant water isn't still. It's just, you know, it's full of life. But this stability, imperturbability, and tranquility are not stagnant water. They are dynamic and active. And another image that Katagiri Roshi used to use when he talked about this point, he would use the image of a wheel. And when a wheel is rolling, if it is a well-tuned wheel, well-balanced wheel, rolling along very smoothly, it's very dynamic. Everything about this wheel is nothing but motion and dynamism. And yet, within this wheel, we can find this calmness, this stability. It's the center of the wheel. It's still very calm. It's very stable. It stays put. It is just there in the midst of all of this dynamic. And this is the kind of stability that he's talking about. And what he's really talking about is that we can find this kind of stability, this kind of tranquility within our own lives, not just sitting quietly, still in a zendo in meditation, but ultimately we can learn to find this kind of quietude and stability even in the dynamic workings of our life. Okay. They're dynamic and active, and they are constantly working. They are life itself. We can't know them through ideas. We cannot know this stability and imperturbability by way of thought. We cannot know this as an idea about even this image of the wheel. Okay, ultimately, Katagiri, you know, he realizes that's just an image. Let's get rid of it. He is talking about in your life, it is possible to know this directly, immediately, not as a thought, not as an idea, not as so many words or anything of that sort, but the actual reality, the stability of your mind, even as you're living it dynamically from moment to moment. Okay, we cannot know them through ideas, he said. Only through our actual experience can they be known. And it is only through our actual experience, in fact, that we can know anything at all. Okay, any questions about it? Yeah, Mike.
Well, when I read this, I felt like he spent a lot of time talking about the source of existence, but when I got and about, okay, and some, you know, stability and perturbability and tranquility are important, but what is the source of existence? You know, it seemed like he spent a lot of time talking about it. But
well, see, there you are. Well, you see, you want him to explain the source of existence. You want him to stretch out the bridge. The source of existence is just this itself. It's right. We will find it right here. And what he's saying is that you will not find it as an explanation. You can't model it. You can't model reality. You can't design something that looks like it. You know, and that's when the question you're asking is, what can I say that will look like the source of existence? Mm-hmm. Nothing looks like the source of existence. You know, the source of existence is the source of existence. And this source of existence is reality itself. It is the reality of your moment as you're living it from moment to moment. And to find this is that stability, that tranquility. But it is not a straight stability and tranquility that is dead. Like a stagnant pond, it is something alive and dynamic. It is the very aliveness and dynamic reality of your life as you know it even now, from moment to moment. See, is this is something that is always there, always present, always ready. It is just that we have to learn to see it. It's as simple as that. It's always kind of up to us, you know. Okay, that's one of the important points in Buddhist teaching, is that this is always left up to you. Whether you awaken or not, it's totally your business. It's completely your endeavor. There's nothing anybody can really do for you on that. I can't help you, really. Point out a few things. Kagyu Roshi can point out a few things. But in the end, it's for each one of us. We have to, get serious and get down to it and start noticing what is taking place here, and finding these kinds of profound, the actual meaning of these profound teachings right here in our life. This kind of stability and tranquility right within the dynamic reality of our life, and not to be tossed away by it, not to be spun out into our own thinking, our own planning, our ideas, to arrange it, to make it work, and to go our way, etc. Even to be thinking about my way, and well, I'm like this, and I like to have it this way, and even to hold thoughts like this, to think in this pattern, is pain and suffering, because it means to think this way, you're constantly bucking up against reality, because reality is never coming your way, it's just coming, and so learn to roll with it. Okay, here's his next section: holding fast and letting go. Here he gives his famous Zen story of the old woman who has this monk in the hut behind him. I remember when I read the transcript, I remember him telling the story too, but I remember I'd kind of forgotten how he told it when I got the transcript. Boy, that's typical of Katagiri. If you know this story, typical thing of Katagiri, he would tell some of these old famous stories, but he'd give a different twist to it that, that no one ever heard, and I hadn't. I'd forgotten this one. I had never heard it anywhere else. And when I sent it in to Shambhala, they also wrote back to me. They said, "Well, wait a minute. This isn't the meaning of that story." I said, "Yeah, I know." I said, "But this is what he said." So we can get a different interpretation. It's about the monk who's living in a hut behind an old woman's house, and she sends her daughter there to profess her love to him, and he. Tree leaning against an ice rock, no warmth for the months of winter, and then the old woman kicks him out, because the guy is just cold-hearted, apparently. That's the normal interpretation of the story. But I won't say too much about the story directly here, but you can read what Katagiri Roshi has to say about it. But what he's bringing out here is that this monk for 20 years, he had it pretty nice. In this cabin, this woman's taking care of him, bringing whatever he needed, and he could just do his practice, sitting in so supposedly favorable conditions. Then suddenly, unfavorable conditions. She kicks him out, burns the hut down. So, but what he's talking about here, once again, the touching the source of existence. You can find this kind of stability, tranquility, imperturbability within your life, so that no matter what comes along, it won't assail you, it won't toss you away. You might have a slight upset here, but now you can just pick up the pieces and continue on. And it is possible. What Zen training and practice is all about is to learn to find this mind, not as an idea or thought, but to actually find this kind of a mind, so that whatever comes along, you can go with it, ride with it. So basically, he's using this story then as to set up for this very point. Then that he says here at the bottom of page 12, he said the totality of your life is beyond these favorable and unfavorable kinds of conditions, beyond this kind of thinking. This kind of thinking of favorable, unfavorable conditions, this is just coming out of your own small, petty, egoistic mind that is trying to satisfy itself, not realizing that in the very process of trying to do that, you make yourself dissatisfied. So it's a confusion there. So what he's saying here is what we can come to realize that the totality of your life is beyond your capacity to judge and evaluate. So how are you ever going to set it up so it's just right for you anyway? You don't even know what that is. And look at how much time and attention we spend trying to do just that. But he says the totality of your life is beyond your capacity to judge and evaluate. There is always more than what you see in your evaluations. Nothing Kadagiri Roshi used to say is that what we need to know is what we don't know. One of those things that I thought, well, wait a minute, you know, this is ridiculous. How can you know what you don't know? But finally, I started to understand what he meant. And this is our main problem, is that there's an awful lot we really are ignorant of, that we don't know. A lot of it is because we're not paying attention. But a lot of it is that we go quite a ways on making some basic assumptions about things. It just there's really no basis for it whatsoever. We do this rather than learn to see the actual circumstances of our life. So he said, there's always more than you see in your evaluations. Even though you see yourself as, now watch this, just to show you the extent to which our evaluations are short-sighted. They're so short-sighted, essentially. He doesn't say this directly, but they're so short-sighted that you really shouldn't put much on them at all, except for what temporary use they might hold for you in the moment. He says, even though you see yourself as lowly and far from Buddha, far from being awake, being enlightened, in other words, he said, Buddha is not something separate from you. So this enlightenment, this very thing that you want, and by the way, you do want this, this is basically what we really want. We might think we want, you know, money, we want the, you know, the reputation, we want this or that, many, many things that people want. A good job, a nice car, home, whatever. You might, you know, but basically what we want, beyond all these, because you can get these things and you're still wanting. What it is that you want, what will finally satiate this craving desire that we have, this is that we want to be awake. We want to not be confused. We want to know what is going on. We really want this enlightenment. And we might slowly come to realize that this is what it is that we ultimately want, but we continue to make it into a particular thing out there that we have to go after and get. What we can come to realize is that you actually already have the very thing that you're going after. There's all kinds of stories in Buddhism of this treasure that is already yours, but we go off looking for it anyway. But the Buddha, he says, the Buddha is not something separate from you. To merge completely with what appears out there in the external world is what we call Buddha. To merge with what is out there, what is seemingly removed and apart from you, whether it is terrifying or whether it is lovely, to merge with this, he's saying, this is what it means to be Buddha. This, in other words, this is what it means to be awake. This is what it means to be enlightened. But this isn't exactly even a merger. This is only being spoken of. He's talking here from the standpoint of delusion, because it's only in our deluded mind that we think we're separate in the first place. We don't actually merge with reality. We can come to realize that we are inseparable from it even now. And if we fully realize what that means, then we don't suffer in the way that we commonly do. But he said, understand that you are Buddha. But who is this Buddha? Then this is the next stage. Well, still continuing from our deluded point, he's just said this. But that this is Buddha. So the next question we might ask them, who is this Buddha then? And he says, we don't know. Because this kind of goes back to you again, Mike, and that you want an answer to this. Well, what is this reality? What is this source of existence? And once again, we want the explanation. As Mozig said last Saturday, we rather than tune into the actual experience, that's the genuine, real, true experience of reality is going on even now, we want an explanation of this reality. We want it explained to us. We can hold it as an idea. This, we do this out of habit, it doesn't really supply us with reality or what it is that will finally satiate our most in most desire of the heart. Okay, so he says, but who is this Buddha? We don't know, because we don't know, first of all, because we cannot hold it as an idea. This is just a thought. So we don't know in that way. In other words, we don't know conceptually. You will never know what enlightenment or reality is as an idea. But in fact, if you look carefully, you know even now just what that is. But we also won't know this reality because it is nothing in particular. And that is precisely what you are even now. An awful lot of the pain and suffering that we experience as human beings because we walk around with all kinds of ideas about ourselves. You know, I'm good, I'm bad, I'm this, I'm that. And we don't realize this is the source of suffering and pain for us, because in fact, you really aren't anything at all in particular. And if you awaken to that, you can be open, tolerant, fluid, flexible, ready for whatever comes along in this moment. But because we hold up a particular image of ourselves now, once again, we're kind of fighting with whatever it is that comes along. Or not always, but often enough to give us a great deal of pain. He gives an example of this then at the very end of this piece. He said, if I evaluate my zazen, very naturally the sense of good or bad comes up. And then he says, I have already slipped from reality. So sure, as soon as we evaluate it, you know, this is good, this is bad, hey, I'm doing, you know, pretty well at this, whatever. But at this point, you've already slipped from reality. You have slipped off into your thought, into your thinking, once again, generating, creating a conceptual reality, which is actually a kind of insanity. It's just to be out of touch with what is really going on. He says, I have slipped from reality. We have to go beyond judgment. After all our evaluating and judging and thinking, which keep us going in zigzags, which isn't particularly pleasant, we have to live. And because we have to live, because we are living now. So after all of this, you know, which doesn't really get us anywhere, going in zigzag, we have to live. We can't ignore the objects that we see, but we can't stay with them either. And so we should just digest them, and we must let them go. Okay. Okay. And the next, any questions?
Well, so if to touch the source of existence, then just to take care of this moment.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I guess that's what I was...
And to take care of this moment isn't taking care of this moment in a sense in the sense that you've actually got to do something here. You have to kind of corral it in and tend it in some way. But just to, see what is actually going on here. You know, deal with this moment as it comes up. In other words, there's no particular thing you have to do to take care of this moment beyond just be present in this moment. Okay, then the next piece, the Golden Earth and the Sweet Long River. This is the closing line of Dogen Zenji's Genjo Koan, which is kind of the classic piece of Dogen Zenji, who, by the way, is a very important teacher in the school that Katagiri Roshi teaches in. And he was the founder of Soto Zen in Japan, as it says here. He lived in the 13th century. He was born in the year 1200. And so he lived in the 13th century. And I'm not going to say too much about that here, but in that Genjo Koan, Dogen refers to, he says that life is, he likens life to riding in a boat, and Kagi Roshi speaks to that here, and I'm going to just say a little bit about that right now, maybe before we end here. He said that Dogen likened life to riding in a boat. Most people just ride the boat of the universe. They are carried along, but they don't know where they're going. This is why people say, we don't know what will happen in the future, so we'll leave it all up to fate. I don't know how many people think that way, but basically, you know, we're kind of going along in life, and do we really know what we're doing? You know, where are you going? What's this, are you really... taking note, taking charge of your life and living your life. or you being tossed about and just carried along by the currents and the ups and downs, okay, the storms of life. I don't know, how far can we go with this analogy? But he says, so we leave it all to fate. This is to drift in the ocean, he said. It's not so good. So Dogen is saying, please use a tiller, use a pole, take hold of an oar and row the boat. In order to sail across the ocean of human life and take our proper stance among the many things of this world, we must see the earth as golden and taste the rivers as sweet milk. He spent a little bit of time talking about how it is that we don't tend to see the earth as golden or the rivers as sweet milk. But he said, if you don't understand, if you don't see any goldenness, you should open your heart and listen. And then he makes a very important point here. He says, you must accept the world in its entirety. And this is a real, you know, he's offering you a real secret here to happiness and to living a life where you're not really being tossed about and perturbed by anything. This is where you can find that stability, this tranquility, this stability of life in the midst of this dynamic working of your life. And that is, he says, that you must accept this world in its entirety. This is to have that balanced wheel, because if we don't accept it in our entirety, we have this wobbly wheel. But this is how we tend to go after our life. We want the stuff that we want, and then we spend an awful lot of our time trying to get that, awful lot of our time trying to get rid of the stuff we don't want. But you should know that you can't do that, actually, because life is always dishing you everything all the time. So there's no point. It's just wasted labor and frustration to try to sort all this out. And besides, we don't really clearly understand what's good and bad anyway. We have a lot of notions about this, but you know, it really comes down to it. It can get pretty confusing, and what you hated yesterday, maybe tomorrow you will love, and you will try to get that back. So basically, what it is, what he's telling here is, if we can learn to accept our life in its totality. It's like when I was a kid, I lived in a very hilly place, and I used to always like to go downhill. But you know, I had this kind of fantasy: wouldn't it be great if you lived in a world where you could just keep going downhill? But it isn't like that, you see. I mean, if you want to experience the downhill, well, you have to experience the uphill as well. So we must accept the world, and this is a very simple statement, but it is profound. If we truly, you know, take this in and take it to heart and realize just what it is that he's saying here, you will find a key to really finding a life with tranquility and stability and happiness that we normally don't find. But again, he means this. I mean, this is not a game. This is not just talking about. This means that when the sorrowful thing hits, accept it. You know, just deal with it as it comes. And when death comes, you can find this kind of tranquility and stability. It is quite possible, and for human beings to do this. And but it is that even now, this picking and choosing mind that we're constantly giving way to, all the while trying to make ourselves happy. If you just look right at that directly, that is not happiness. Right on the face of it, it is not happiness, and you will not find happiness there. You will find it by learning to see that picking and choosing mind for what it is. And then maybe you can begin to embrace your life in its entirety. Jay?
There's a difference between accepting the world in its entirety and accepting your life. And what I'm trying, if you see in the world misjustice, or that does not mean that you should not respond appropriately to that.
Yeah. No, of course not. Yeah, it doesn't. Yes. And then people misunderstand. That's a good point. People misunderstand this. That somehow now this means to sit on your hands and don't do anything. And that's not really true at all. On the other hand, if you are going to act, and of course we have to act, we have no choice but to act. Even if we choose not to act, that's acting. So we can't get off the hook no matter what we do anyway. But the point here is that the emphasis is on our waking up and seeing, you know, what is going on here first. This is very important for us, as opposed to just you know, acting, we might be acting out of our own fears, our own worries, our own, you know, all kinds of things here. Well, I'm afraid we're running out of time. Maybe I could, but that's a good point, Jay. Just quickly, I don't want to hold you here, but he said, if you would practice a spiritual life, you cannot carry on just according to your limited understanding. And that would apply to, you know, if you see injustice in the world, whatever. You have to really see this in its entirety, that the people who are perpetrating the injustice against others, well, there's a story there now too, and why has this come about? You can't just say they're bad. You see, this is what he means. You have to embrace all of that. Take that into account. The conflict, say, in Kosovo now, and the Serbs, and now there's the retaliation. Of course there's going to be this is, what do you expect? But you see, if we can become larger and more magnanimous in it, and try to embrace all of these people who are suffering and who are so terribly confused, this is the only way we will ever get out of this kind of situation. And it does no good to take part of this situation and to shove it off, you see. So far from, you know, sitting on your hands or anything like that, this is what he's talking about here. Because what we are really talking about is what is going on within your own mind. Well, let's see. Can I get through this quickly? To practice for the long run, you must have a profound aspiration to live your life in peace and harmony with all sentient beings. This is to take hold of the tiller, to grab an oar. It is called living in vow, aspiring to awaken in each moment. And so this, we make this, the first point is that we will be here, we will be awake, we will not be tossed away and caught up in our own thinking, our own longings and loathings and whatnot. To live in vows, to take care of the little details of your life, like getting up in the morning. When it is time to get up, just get up. So once again, he's giving you the ticket here, the key, the pointer. He says, this is how you take care of these small details of your life, and this is how you learn to embrace your life as a whole. Like, for example, getting up in the morning. Maybe you don't want to get up, but if it's time, just get up. Just get up, and now you have acquired a great power over your life if you can just learn to do this. But he says, this is the way to enter... this is the way to enter the doors of a golden, peaceful world. When it's time to get up, just get up. It's as simple as that, just in these little ways. A little further down, he says, the goldenness of the earth is found in just such activities in everyday life. So this is really the real secret to happiness and stability. Okay, well, maybe I've said enough on that page. We'll pick it up from here next week then. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.